Final hour here, Robbie and Rex, 1025-1063, the game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Hit us up in the Game of Phone text line, driven by WilsonCountyHunting.com, 615-737-1025. Jake Lyman in for Robbie Stanley today, and on that phone line, talking Titans, we've got Ed in New Jersey. Ed, what's going on, my man?
Hey, guys, good morning. So the perception that I see from this front office, and you guys have touched on it, is that, you know, there's a clear line, a separation of church and state between front office and coaching staff, whereas in the past it was all collaborative. Not saying there's not collaboration going on, but there's an evaluation of not only the players from the front office, but also the coaching staff. So where I struggle is, it's pretty clear, if Cam doesn't develop, then the bullseye goes on Callahan. But what about a guy like Femi, and what about a guy like Kevin Winston? If they don't develop, are the positional defensive coaches at risk? Is Denard Wilson at risk? And who's the person in the room that's going to challenge the front office to say, not the development, it's the players that you picked? So I just think it's a kind of a good setup as a finger pointing and a kind of a parachute for the front office, and I wanted to get your opinion on that.
Thank you, Ed. That's a great call and great points and great questions. And, man, I mean, we're going to talk about this front office and Brian Callahan and, you know, the idea that, you know, maybe they have someone else in mind. Again, to me, that's just crazy to think when you are in this job, and this job is such a – the shelf lives can be so short that if you believed that, like if you're Borgonzi coming in and you believed you had someone, or if you're Chad Brinker and you believed you had someone, that you wouldn't just do it then. You know, because that guys get fired. Coaches get fired in 1 year in the NFL. So it's just hard for me to, first of all, and this is not what Ed's asking about, but it's hard for me to get to this idea that they're just sort of throwing away this year with a coach they don't believe in. You know, and that's just hard for me to buy. But it's a great point, and again, like I said, question from Ed about like the separation. It does seem that way. It does seem like maybe, you know, the coach at this point has less of a voice, but I don't know that. I wouldn't be comfortable speculating. Some people are very comfortable speculating on that. I don't think that these organizations out there that are successful don't have true collaboration. I think sometimes you can get in trouble with the coach GM, but I think you can also get in trouble if your coach is just a guy in the corner. You're like, here's your players. Good luck, buddy. That just doesn't make sense to me. So I think it's a great, you know, question. I don't have an answer on it, but I do think that maybe the separation of GM and coach is a little bit overblown right now.
Yeah.
If not, then I really don't like Brian Callahan's chances.
I did find it interesting. It felt like they went out of their way yesterday, berserker. They went out of their way to praise Brian Callahan multiple times and talk about how much they believe in him. I think that's something to take note of. I think they've probably heard people talking about how he might be a lame duck coach this year, but I've never understood that, because you just took Cam Ward number one overall. Why would you purposefully waste his first year knowing you're going to fire the coach? It doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. Like, if that's how you're thinking about it, like, yeah, all right, well, this guy gave him a second year, and, you know. And again, like, you can always have meddling owners. Like, if owners want to really over-meddle, they can say, no, you can't fire him. I want him another year.
That's true.
If that's the case, well, you're screwed. I mean, because the front office should be able to make those decisions, right?
But
obviously, the owner can step in at any point and fire someone. But if you want, like, let's say that scenario, these guys did actually have someone in mind. These guys don't want Brian Callahan, but Amy's like, no, you're not allowed to fire him. Well, then it's just a terrible situation. I don't think that's the case. But if that were the case, it would be a terrible, terrible situation.
Yeah, logically, if you thought you were just going to have Brian Callahan do a lame duck year this year, maybe Amy's tired of paying people not to work for her anymore and didn't want to fire both Ryan and Callahan. If that was the case, then you don't take Cam Ward. Like, you trade out of that pick and just, you know, hope you can hit it next year. But I don't think you take the quarterback and basically put all your chips in on Cam Ward,
knowing that you're going to flip the script on
right.
him.
Right. You're like, hey, Cam.
But man, unless those guys are, look, I don't care. He's that good. He's going to be fine. He'll survive it. It'll be okay.
That's a good point.
But I generally agree with you. Bringing in the QB to play for the QB whisperer coach who is on borrowed time anyway is just bizarre.
It makes no sense.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
So it's really interesting. But, yeah, look, when it comes down to the accountability Ed's asking about, if Oladejo's a bad pick, Winston's a bad pick, you know, as we start to see this unfold and see the choices and how they work out, I think Borgonzi certainly is on the hook for that, and then then it gets into the answering question of how much is Brinker on the hook. You know, Brinker brought in by Ran, promoted over Ran, still here while they fire Ran. I mean, is it out of the realm possibility that Borgonzi could impress so much that all of a sudden he's promoted over Brinker? I mean, I don't know. This could go a lot of different ways.
Yeah, who's next in line for the chopping block? Callahan is the easy one. I think he would be next, but then. Let's say things go horribly, you do fire Callahan, and things keep going horribly. Who's next? I would think Brinker, probably. I think it's just whoever was brought in furthest back, that's the next one who's going to get fired until they finally find a combination that works.
I would think so, too.
Don't they need to like clean house at some point if they're going to keep doing that? Firing the coach, keeping the front office... Keeping the coach, firing the front office. Like, at some point, if you're going to keep going back and forth, you just need to get rid of all of them, bring in somebody, and start over.
Yeah.
This year was your chance to do that.
Yeah, that's true. And you could go back to 2016 when you make the John Robinson hire, which was a great hire.
Yeah, it's been all ever since the firing of Robinson, it's been all this whole keep the GM, fire the GM, keep the coach, hire a new GM, fire the coach, keep the GM, bring in the new GM, keep the coach. It's like all over the place.
Right. And then, you know, even through all that, and we've talked about this with the Preds too, a lot of the people who are driving the decisions, who are doing the work, have been a part of the franchise. Now, that has changed over time a fair amount, but there's still some scouts and people and personnel who have been here through a lot of these changes too, which is another interesting part of it. But yeah, look, I like Skyler says, you know, the owner is the problem. Can't fire the owner. The Titans are farted. Well, yeah, I mean, that is one way to look at it for sure. But what happens, even with owners who prove themselves to be at times out of their depth in pro sports, is sometimes they still get lucky on hires. If Mike Borgonzi. Yeah, Chad Brinker said it yesterday a couple times. Mike's building this roster. So if Mike Borgonzi has a great feel for this job, Oladejo, I think, is a great person to bring up because it's a little bit not out of left field. He's a prospect, but still, there were other guys who you could have picked who probably a little more ready right now. This is a high ceiling, kind of a risky pick, hasn't played the position long, but there are a lot of traits to like. Well, there's an example of one of those that, if it works out, you look at it and you're like, okay, that's a pretty shrewd move, right? Obviously, Cam Ward's going to dictate everything. Cam's dictate, regardless of Brian Callahan, Cam is going to tell the story.
Everybody's job depends on Cam Ward now,
right? But we're going to find out. Amy may have themselves someone who's really good, and if that's the case, then eventually they're all going to look better and they're all going to be fine. They're going to have a stretch of stability, but you still also have that question of the coach and how they really feel about it. Again, I can't believe that they don't think he has a chance to be the long-term answer with all this stuff. If that's the case, it's just – then to me, they are screwed. They are farted. They are absolutely farted if that is how they are looking at it. When we come back, we will get into some of what they said and some of what it might mean. Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Tune in for player interviews and the latest updates on the Titans training camp as the team preps for the 25-26 season. Coverage of Titans training camp presented by Macero and 12 South and Parman Energy Group. Chase and Big Joe will be out there today and tomorrow. Also, this week's National best deal is Eastside Bowl in Madison. Eastside Bowl is a vintage bowling alley, music venue, lounge, and arcade designed by locals for locals. Get 2 hours of bowl plus shoe rentals for up to six people for just $45 while supplies last. Go to thegamenashville.com/deals to get yours now. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Jake Lyman in for Robbie, and we are talking Titans. We are talking Brian Callahan and his relationship with the front office and what the expectations are and how that might go. You know, Corey Curtis texted me and said, you know, this is like the Bears did with, you know, with Eberflus and et cetera, Caleb Williams. And I said, yes, but first of all, it wasn't a one-year thing. And also, I mean, Eberflus last year, I don't, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he was absolutely, they were going to fire him no matter what, and that would be stupid if they drafted Caleb Williams, they were going to fire him no matter what. To me, I mean, Eberflus got fired in season after he completely botched the clock in the game at Detroit. And I think over time, how many years did Eberflus coach the Bears?
Do we know? Three.
That sounds right to me. But, you know, it wasn't a, again, Callahan here has been here for 1 year. It's a little bit different situation. I just don't, again, I don't know that, now they got Ben, it was three?
Three years, yep.
You know, they end up getting Ben Johnson. That's who they think is going to be perfect for Caleb Williams, and it may be.
Well, he got fired in his third season, so yes. Almost made it through.
Fired in his third season. Yeah, so, yes, the Bears have been, just like Ian, just like you've been talking about, the timeline situation with the Bears. Is like they've done that famously for a long time.
Yeah.
But you know, but that's a little bit different situation. So there was some talk of Brian Callahan yesterday. Here is some of what we heard during their press conference. Sorry.
With the patience and looking for constant improvement, like how does that apply to Brian Callahan? What are some of the things that you're looking for to say, okay, he's gotten better from then until now?
Yeah, do you want
that? Yeah, I mean, you can see it in the spring, you know, the way he interacts with the players, you know, the way that he communicates with them, and you could see them develop over the spring. And, you know, I think he's got a really good control of the team. I've been impressed with that. So, you know, like I said, it's going to be an evaluation process here as we go through training camp, as we get into the season, and how he develops these players and how the coaching staff does. And so far, they've done a tremendous job.
And I'll just add there, TD, I want Brian or Mike to speak on it because, you know, this is the first time he's had an opportunity to work with Brian. And I think he's been really impressed with Brian and just how smart he is, and he's a good football coach. And I know personally I've seen him grow from year one to year two like anybody would, whether it's a new GM or a new head coach or any position in your organization. There's a confidence there that I've been impressed with, and the way he's communicated with the players, with his staff, with everybody in the building, I've seen tremendous growth in Brian. We believe in Brian. I think he's done a really good job heading this offseason, but obviously, you know, as we head into the season, you know, we got to get these players. Development's a big part of our program. We've been preaching draft and develop, and that's not going away. We need to have coaches who are just the best teachers that we can possibly find that can help these players, you know, reach their potential. So by year three of a rookie deal, we know what we're dealing with. Is this a guy that we can really build a future around, or do we have to replace it, you know, with another younger player or somebody else? So the development piece of this is essential. And I've been really impressed with Brian from the coaching development and just the whole understanding the big picture of how to run a football team.
So there's a lot of interesting, you know, commentary yesterday from those guys about Brian Callahan. There was some talk about the you know, little team building stuff that went on, you know, during the off season. You know, Chris in Nashville texting lip service, maybe. I mean, again, it's like it's just hard for me to get to the idea that this is all a ruse, essentially, right? That they're not giving him a legitimate chance. Like what if that's their mindset? And this year, Cam Ward's amazing, and Cam Ward publicly, privately is like, you know, Cali has just brought out the best of me. The guy, he's we have an amazing partnership. So do you change your mind? I just can't believe that the mind would be made up right now.
Well, and you wrote this down on the grid. Like, why is everybody so sure that Callahan stinks? Like, I don't understand what you saw last year. Like, yes, the team went 3-14.
The product was bad.
And the product was bad, and a lot of that does fall on the shoulders of the coach. But they had horrible offensive line play and a quarterback who couldn't get out of his own way most of the time. I thought, for the most part, Callahan's play calling was pretty good last year. There were some things in terms of being the head coach that he wasn't great at. But that comes with experience. And he did show, and I've said this before, he showed that he is not afraid to fire his friends when they don't do a good job. Cold Anderson's gone. He brought in Bones Fossil, who is one of the more accomplished special teams coaches available in the league. So I'm not saying I think Brian Callahan is going to completely turn it around in 1 year. But I don't get why so many Titans fans don't want to give him a chance to turn it around.
Yeah, look, and some people have their minds made up. They do. They have their minds made up, and I'm with you. It's hard sometimes to separate everything. It's hard. It's just hard to just say, here's the pie, and let's split it up, and this is a 19% on Brian Callahan. And I do think that there was a big mistake made. And remember, Brian Callahan was a very pursued coach. Doesn't mean he's going to be good. There are plenty of hot name coaches in pro and college football who turn out not to be good. But he was very pursued. He does have, you know, the resume and the path to be a good coach. And he took over what I would argue is the worst roster in the NFL.
Yeah.
I think the mistake, a huge mistake, and so you could blame him. You could also blame Rand. You could blame Brinker. Blame anybody who signed off on it. Blame Amy, because we can blame all this on Amy. But the having two rookie coordinators is a mistake.
For sure.
Like, and, of course, like you said, you know, the special teams coordinator was a disaster last year. You worry a little bit about.
And your OC is like somebody you know. So yeah, is he really.
Friend from high school.
You know, reluctant to maybe speak up when. Somebody else might. I don't know. They did bring in Mike McCoy this year. He's got some experience and some offense on the staff. Maybe he can help a little.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they made some changes. Like you said, a Fossil is definitely a good hire. Texter says Callahan's a one hit wonder with Joe Burrow. Really, it was just Joe Burrow being that guy, not Callahan being a good coach. You certainly can say that, but it's just like with anything. Like everybody wants to put everything on the quarterback. It's all the praise of the quarterback or all the blame to the quarterback. But quarterbacks do work with coaches, and quarterbacks do work with some coaches better than others, or in some systems better than others, with some personnel better than others, right? Like the idea that you can completely separate him from any success they had, I think, is a little bit of a bit of a reach. I don't know how much, and maybe he was just a passenger, but he's also a guy who in his career has been around and seen the best of the best in different types of quarterbacks, which should be instructive and should be helpful for him. I'm just saying, like, I think if you right now are convinced and you know for sure what he is as a head coach, I think you're taking some leaps.
Yes. I'm not saying that I think he's going to be the head coach here for 10 years and put this team back on the map. But I think to say that you know he's not the guy is a stretch at this point. I agree with you that hiring all rookie coordinators, including the special teams coordinator, was not a good idea. Jared has made the point many times that he should have done what Sean McVay did when he was hired as the head coach of the Rams and just hire a guy to take the defense and say, I'm going to be the head coach. I'm going to focus on the offense because I'm the play caller. You will be basically my defensive head coach. He didn't do that. Like, Denard Wilson, I think, has promise, but again, he hadn't done it before. So there were some mistakes made last year, but like you said, the idea that we know heading into this season that Brian Callahan is not a good head coach, I just don't believe that yet.
All right, quickly, Matt from Bellevue on the phone line, driven by WilsonCunningham.com. Matt, what's up?
What's up, fellas? How you doing tonight?
Good.
So I mean, when I hear you guys talking this morning, all I could put it to is I'm an Ohio State fan. Well, the Ohio State, a little respect for Dynasty. But Callahan, to me, is identical to Ryan Day. After Ryan Day lost to Michigan, everybody, including myself, wanted that guy gone. Get him gone, right? So you could say that Ryan Day, going into the playoffs last year, was a dead man walking, was a lame duck, was whatever you want to say. What did he do? Well, he absolutely embarrassed Tennessee and took them to pieces. He beat a sound Texas team. He wiped the field with Notre Dame. He lifted the championship. He's a national champion. And now no one, not the president of Ohio State, not the fan base, no one can run Ryan Day out of Columbus. That man's good for at least another 3 years. Win an Natty, you get 3 years. That's about what LSU coach got. So if this guy doesn't like being a lame duck, if he doesn't like the conversations about him, all he has to do is get 9-10 wins, be in a conversation of a wild card, and he's job secure. So you control your own destiny in life. So it is what it is. There's no such thing as a lame duck, because a lame duck coach like Ryan Day at Ohio State can flip the script and become very secure. Winning is everything.
All right, thank you, Matt. Appreciate the call. We will react to that and get to some other things, including some sad news. Robbie and Rexrod, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexrod, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Jake Lyman in for Robbie. The caller there, real quick, first of all, it's an interesting comparison with Ryan Day. One thing that helps Ryan Day is to have by far the most talented team in your particular sport to go ahead
very good
and
point.
Shut people up. But, yeah, look, I know Ohio State fans. Apparently Matt's not one of them, but I know Ohio State fans are like, great Natty, don't lose to Michigan this year. I mean, you know, like it can flip on you. I mean, that's just so hard to compare. You know, someone said in the YouTube chat, it's like, you know, in the NFL, it's just a different deal, right? Super Bowl winning coaches have been fired 2 to 3 years after winning. You know, Doug Peterson wins it, maybe the most brilliantly coached game I've ever seen in the Super Bowl to beat Tom Brady and the Patriots, and fired and now fired again at Jacksonville. Like, yeah, it's just so look, you all may be right about him being a passenger with Joe Burrow. Here's a texter who says, quote, I appreciate what both of you are saying about Brian Callahan, but it seems like you both tend to be give them a chance guys. I heard you talk about Levis the same way, among others. And let me interject. Yes, before I know what someone is, I mean, Levis's first glimpse was decent, right? I mean, did he do some good things as a rookie? Texter continues, I'm with Jared. I think you can get an idea of some of these players and coaches early on. Callahan seems weak and has done little to impress or give confidence to his abilities. Well, that's fine. Jared always thinks someone sucks right away, and then sometimes he's proven right, sometimes proven wrong. I mean, if you want to go through the list of people he said sucks who ended up being good, there's a long list of that too, okay? I think that it's very fair to look at Brian Callahan and ask the question if he holds people accountable enough. I also think if you go around the NFL and really even college football, if you go around coaching, there are more coaches who are in the vein of Brian Callahan, whatever word you want to use, collaborative, than there are the classic, you know, hard driving, hard boiled, exactly, Vrabel, who we'll get to in a second. Bottom line is you have to get people to perform. That doesn't necessarily have to be the old school, just, you know, scream at them and by gal, you do this or that. But I do think that, like, it's fair, and this is something Jared brought up. Like last year when Jeff Simmons was just absolutely, you know, going wild at camp and doing dumb stuff. Like, do you sit him down? Do you do something publicly to maybe show people, like, this is not okay? I think that's a fair thing to bring up. So while I think the traditional hold people accountable thing with coaches ignores where coaching has gone. I think that's still fair. Can he get people to perform? You say you liked his play calling last year. I think at times you definitely saw some of that. I also think it's like, we can't block people, man.
He was limited.
Yeah. But then that also, does that take too much accountability away from him? I mean, I don't know. Look, I'm just telling you, like, I don't always know. And right now, I don't feel like I know. So I don't have, he is going to make it. He sucks. I don't have either of those takes right now. You can have either of them.
That's where I am too. Like, I'm not trying to go out here and say Brian Callahan is a top 10 coach in the league and anyone wants to fire him is stupid. Like, I get it. It wasn't good enough last year, and he has to improve in pretty much every area of his job this season, holding people accountable. I said the play calling I thought was decent, but I think we need to, the offense obviously has to be more explosive, and you have to see him develop these players. The young guys have to get better throughout the year. Like, J.C. Latham should be a really good right tackle
and
by
his,
the end of
and
the
year. And his dad, the biggest hire that they've made in the coaching realm, that's his deal.
Right.
It's that's got to matter.
Cam Ward has to show promise this year. But it's also the other way. I can't say that I know he's horrible right now. Let's give him more than 1 year and give him this full off season of growth and see what he can do this year before we go pitchforks and torches and try and run him out of town.
But hey, if that's what you want to do, you can do that. Texter says, you're saying give him a chance after they were factually the worst team in the NFL. Why does that mean I should give him the benefit of the doubt? I'm just telling you that he coached 1 year and it was the worst roster in the NFL. I think factually it was the worst roster in the NFL. Or, yeah, whatever. Bottom three roster in the NFL. So, I mean, why does that mean there's no chance he could be good? I guess that I would flip the question around on you.
I'm not saying Zach Taylor is the best coach in the world, but I'm sure there were Bengals fans saying the same thing after they were the worst team in 2019. 2 years later, they were in the Super Bowl. Not saying that's all Zach Taylor. Obviously, Joe Burrow coming into the fold had a large part. But now you have Cam Ward. Maybe he's the spark that you need. You can't fire a guy after one bad season. Let's see what he does and improves upon in year two.
So I think now would be a good time, as we've been talking about the current coach, to take a little break and enjoy the previous coach, Mike Vrabel, yesterday with the Pats media.
Now the guys are back. I know there's 90 of them, but generally speaking.
91.
91, excuse me, international pathway. How'd they do? How do you feel about how the guys came back?
I mean, whether you were in a coma when I answered Tom's question or typing on your phone or tweeting, I don't know, but I spent 5 minutes answering that question. And I can go back through it, but I'd rather not. We won't know. We did pretty good on the linear run test, which they practiced. They knew what it was going to be. The big thing will come when they're in line contact. I mean, and you're sitting there, you're wrestling with a guy, and then the D lineman's rushing. He almost gets to the quarterback, but we're telling him to plant and run and go sprint to the football and then go do it again. Or we're asking Kyle Williams to go run a post, and he didn't get the ball, but he wanted to get the ball, but he didn't. Can he run back, get set, know what to do the next play? That's really where we'll see. So I'll be able to answer that question again, hopefully only once in a few days.
The Vrabster. Oh my goodness, boy, is he gonna enjoy that? You know, he's got like probably about a handful of PKs, a couple Jareds up there. We're gonna have a lot of good moments from Vrabel.
He better win. Like, if he's gonna keep doing that, he better win.
Yeah. All right. I want to quickly make an announcement here, and this has been in the Tennessean. I think Willie has put it out there. Terribly, terribly sad news. Erin Donick, Willie's wife, passed away yesterday, 54 years old, and it's hard to put into words, just the sadness that we feel for Willie and his family. I do want to read quickly. Brad Schmidt did a really nice obit of Erin in the Tennessean, about her involvement in the community. I mean, quote from Roger Dinwiddie, CEO of Stars Nashville, where she's been there as development director from 2008. He said, quote, Erin was a friend to everyone. Erin made everyone she came in contact with feel better at themselves. She shared her love for those she worked with. And Willie is quoted here too. And Willie has been so strong, through all this. And of course, Willie's been coming in and doing the show. Here's the Willie quote. Quote, she spent virtually her entire professional career helping others in the nonprofit sector of Nashville, Boys and Girls Club, Community High School, and Stars. Erin had a positive energy force that impacted layers and layers of people of all ages and backgrounds, made a lasting impression on not only close friends and loved ones, but often on people that only met her a few times, could make any person or group of people feel comfortable in any setting. More from Willie. Quote, many turned to her during their darkest, toughest struggles for support and guidance, a true gift. We all felt truly lucky to know her. Her light on all of us will never go out. End quote. Beautifully spoken. Rest in peace, Aaron Donick. All our love to the Donick family. And we'll be back on Robbie and Rex Road. Last segment here, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Jake Lyman in for Robbie. We are awaiting Brian Callahan at the podium. When he gets there, we will take you to the start of that. I think probably Chase and Big Joe will jump in. And, I mean, I imagine it's probably going to be about a half-hour press conference. So, you know, we'll get out. Chase and Big Joe, who are out there, will jump in. I see Nick Frazier just poised, ready to pounce in there in the studio. Thank you to those of you who sent prayers, thoughts, love, hugs, everything you can send to the Donicks. Very much appreciate that. There was a Titans media policy that I wanted to get to today that we'll have to deal with tomorrow, which is a policy change, which is really, really interesting. We'll get to that. But in the meantime, I hope their policy is not to start press conferences later than scheduled. I mean, they used to be – you know, when Vrabel was head coach, it was like, boom, you know, 1,400 hours
still
on the dot.
Stalling here, yeah.
My goodness. So, you know what? Maybe you guys are right. Brian Callahan can't show up for his 8:45 press conference.
You know what? I've changed my mind completely on him.
I mean, it is kind of like if you're going to have your time be 8:45, that's a very
right.
To me, even if it's 9, it's like, or what, a top of an hour, it's like, yeah, you know, 9:03.
Yeah.
But I feel like if you're going to say we are having a press conference at 8:45 a.m.
You better be there at 8:45.
I'm not looking for a press conference that starts at 8:49 a.m. I'm looking for, you know, you to be on your P's and Q's. There we go.
For football here, really looking forward to the start of camp. I love training camp. I love what it brings. I love what it means. We have a chance to really take a step forward from what I felt was a really productive offseason. And now we have a chance to go put some pads on and play football and see how much better our team can get between now and our opening game. We got a lot of great work ahead of us versus each other, and then with a chance to go practice against two other teams here coming up pretty quickly, and then the preseason games as well. So a lot of work ahead, things I'm really looking forward to. Want to make sure our team comes out of this training camp with the identity that we're looking for, which is we're looking for a really smart, tough, high executing ability team that doesn't beat itself. And those are what we're after sort of every day we come out here, and looking forward to getting started. With that, go ahead.
How will you measure success for Cam Ward through this training camp?
For the quarterback position in general, it's a growth every day, you know, especially for a young player. There's a lot of things that I thought he handled really, really well in the spring. And it's carrying over those things you've learned and applying them in a little bit more intense setting. And now we get a chance to actually go play a little football, play against some different schemes. His development is a daily process, and there's going to be things that we got to correct every day, and there's going to be things that he's going to do really well every day we're going to try to continue those things. So every single day, I think, is going to be opportunity for development for him, and I'm looking forward to it.
How much is timing at the center of this passing, and how much are his feet at the center of that time?
The feet are really everything when it comes to your timing in the offense. You know, everything is tied to, you know, is it a 3-step drop? Is it a 5-step drop? Is it an under center play action 7-step drop? Are you taking 1 hitch, 2 hitches? What is the route depth? What are the receiver steps? So all of that stuff works together. And, you know, the way I've learned offensive football from a lot of really good coaches is that the success of the passing game, it depends on the timing and discipline of the receivers and the quarterback, and that's ultimately what we're trying to get done. Cam's got great feet. He understands it, and now it's just repping that over and over again to where it becomes second nature.
Where are you at this stage? Yeah.
I feel really good about where we came out of the spring. I think at the end of the spring, he was starting to really understand and feel what that timing felt like, and this is going to be a huge point of emphasis in his early part of camp to get as comfortable with it as possible, as quickly as we can. And I think he's up to that task.
Real out equation, how does that change what you were going to do with reps? How do you handle reps with Cam and the quarterbacks?
Take a majority of the ones reps, obviously. That's going to be a huge part of his development over the course of the camp. And those other guys will fill in those other spots, the twos and three reps that are coming up. I've generally really carried three quarterbacks a lot of years in camps and for that reason. So there's more reps to go around for the guys that you're trying to pour into, and those guys that we're trying to pour into.
So Carter's retirement came as a bit of a surprise to you guys. How does that impact the competition with the edge group?
Yeah, I mean, certainly anytime a guy decides to hang him up is comes as a surprise, especially, you know, you get to right before training camp. It happens. It happens around the league. We're not, you know, the only ones that have it happen to us. But, yeah, it's you lose a player that you put some time and effort into developing and being a part of the system. So we're going to have to fill that with the guys that we have here. And we have some young players that have played some for us, and Jalen Harrell and Ali Gay, who hopefully can take another step for us. And then, again, you're still always looking to improve your team where you can. So that those reps are going to go to the guys that are here, and we'll keep trying to push those guys forward.
Brandon Allen's numbers, not necessarily a lot of highlights there, but you know him better than anyone. What do you like about him? What do you value about him that you want him to
be? Yeah, I spent a lot of years with Brandon. He's been in the league for, I think, 10 years now, so he's kind of seen all of what it means to be a quarterback in this league, good and bad. He's got a great feel for the system, for how to operate. He understands the role of the backup quarterback. He's got a lot of experience he can share with Cam as well, from all the places he's been and things he's done and seen. He also knows how to play quarterback. You know, he knows how to do it. He can help manage the offense, operate it when he steps in there. So a lot of things that I like about Brandon. I'm very familiar with his game and what he does well. And he had a pretty good spring too, so we'll see how he looks in training camp.
Once Levis has the surgery, do you want him back here participating in meetings and rehabbing here, or will he do that on his own?
As of right now, he'll be out in California for a little while, and when and where after that process comes back, we'll see.
Can you talk much about what to expect from him, or are you kind of just with Will? Have you talked much with him about what to expect when he gets back, or are you kind of just letting him figure that out?
We'll address that when it comes. He's going out there to get surgery. He'll be out there for a little bit rehabbing post-op, and then we'll kind of take it from there. You know, there's no real concrete plan at this point.
Put him on IR right away and get the roster spot, or do you have to wait for
the I am. It's probably a better question for Mike. I think we can put him on IR even if he hadn't had the surgery yet, I think, but don't hold me to that. I'll come right back.
Yeah, Brian, in the spring you were talking about how you didn't necessarily want Cam to try to be a leader, just to try to get a feel for the day-to-day, what he has to do in the huddle, everything. At this point, as you guys get closer to the season, is that something you maybe want him to maybe make a concerted effort to grow more into?
Yeah, I think I get what you're asking as far as the encouragement to lead. I believe that Cam's got a very natural ability about him, just his personality. And I think I just, for the most part, would like him just to focus on playing good football and being himself. And I think that's going to be enough for him. He's got natural leadership qualities. They'll come out the more he's involved, the more he has success. So that'll happen naturally, I think. So I don't want to force him to do anything that's not organic to him, and I think he'll do a really good job with that.
When it comes to Jeffrey Simmons, how important is it for him to kind of set the tone as leader of the entire team his first couple days of training camp?
Yeah, I don't ever worry about Jeff setting the tone. That's sort of his MO, but he's a huge piece of our defensive front. He's a huge part of our football team, and him playing well usually leads to really good things for our defense. And I'm excited to see where Jeff's at. He put a lot of work in this offseason. He's in phenomenal shape. Excited to see him put some pads on and be the Jeff that I think everyone here knows and loves.
All right, that's Brian Callahan. He's still going. We will continue there on the other side with Chase and Big Joe. Thank you, everyone, for sending the love. Keep sending that love to the Donics. Jake Lyman, thank you. We'll see you tomorrow. Ian Safar, Chase and Big Joe coming up next. Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.